With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
I'm the dude, so that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast, we get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here, this is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today's episode, we're doing Finding Nemo.
Bloop, 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 bloop.
That's my fish impression.
That's not bad.
Oh, thank you.
This is episode 32.
Huzzay! Wait, nope. Huzzah! Nope. Hooray! I don't know. I mix those.
All right. Hooray, huzzah, and...
32 is pretty great. I'm really excited that we're in the 30s now. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, we're getting close to our halfway point.
God, yeah, we are.
Finding Nemo was directed by Andrew Stanton and Lee Unkrich. We talked about Lee Unkrich before when we did WALL-E.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Stanton has been a writer for a lot of Pixar movies, including four, and soon to be five. Toy Story movies.
Is he writing the fifth one?
It says he's credited as a writer, but I don't...
Dang.
We'll have to wait until we get closer to the release, and maybe he'll just be based on the characters by...
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he is.
Yeah.
I mean, he did write 1 through 4, so maybe he will. But he also did A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., WALL-E, of course,
mm-hmm.
Finding Dory, which makes sense, and... Yeah, and then, when we did WALL-E, we talked about Lee Unkrich as well. He has worked on so many Pixar projects. Between the two of them, I think they've covered every Pixar movie. A writer, as a producer, as a part of the creative team. Between the two of them, these are the Pixar creators
mm-hmm.
of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're the dream team, right?
Finding Nemo was written, of course, like I said, by Andrew Stanton. Also, Bob Peterson, who wrote Up and The Good Dinosaur. David Reynolds, who was one of the writers of Late Night with Conan O'Brien in the beginning.
Hmm.
He was also an additional writer for Dexter's Laboratory, the original Mulan, and Emperor's New Groove.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of history in this little...
I know that Pixar did not start off as a part of Disney, but, like, they were all... sort of, they're all connected. It was all, it's all family. It's all, my cousin works there and I work here. And it's just, it's one big happy family over there.
And then, of course, somebody else who's, this isn't his first rodeo with Pixar, is Thomas Newman, the composer. He's worked on 128 other projects since 1979. We talked about him a little bit when we did the music for WALL-E as well, right?
Yeah, Thomas Newman.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think this was his first, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I could hear, you can hear the similarities.
You absolutely could hear the similarities, yeah. You can kind of hear, and it was very, he did the music for like Shawshank or The Green Mile, didn't he?
He did a bunch. He did Skyfall, 1917, which has a great soundtrack, Elemental, Finding Nemo and Dory. Road to Perdition, which has a great soundtrack.
Yeah, see, it's got that Thomas Newman sound. That's sort of like...
The Salt and Sea.
Yeah.
The Green Mile.
Yeah, called it.
American Beauty.
Uh-huh.
Meet Joe Black.
Mm-hmm.
Scent of a Woman.
Yeah, no, he's...
The guy...
The guy has a... He's a phenomenal...
very talented composer.
Yeah.
But you can definitely...
You hear it.
Like a lot of other composers, there's patterns and similarities that are fun to pick out. While you're watching, the cinematography of Finding Nemo was done by Sharon Callahan, Jeremy Lasky, and Jerrica Cleland. The three of them have worked on many Pixar films, not necessarily together, but they have all worked on visual effects and cinematography. You'll like this. Jerrica Cleland was the cinematographer for Arthur Christmas.
Oh, how we love Arthur Christmas. Such a good film.
It is a great animated
Makes Christmas me ugly movie. Cry every single time so I watch good. It. Oh, God, the blubbering, sobbing. Every time I watch that movie, it's just
I think Arthur Christmas, Christmas Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
This is for me personally.
Yeah, because you know how I feel about the vacation movies. Yeah, I know you don't care about the
vacation movies.
Not even a little.
Arthur Christmas, Christmas Vacation, and Elf are like my three I have to. I'll watch others as well, but I have to watch those three every year.
For me, it's Arthur Christmas, Elf, and at least one version of A Christmas Carol.
We haven't watched Christmas Carol in a while.
We haven't.
Oh, maybe we will sometime.
Yeah.
Finding Nemo was certified fresh with a 99% from critics.
Yeah.
And only an 86% from audiences.
Okay.
Audiences, just to go off of the episode we did last week, Gone Girl, was 87%. So Finding Nemo from audiences got 1% lower than Gone Girl.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it's hard to talk to the kids. You know, it's not like the kids are filling that out. It's usually the parents. After all, I know it's a Pixar movie and a Disney movie, but it's still also kind of a kids movie.
I think parents get this the most. I mean, we've all been through childhood, so we know what that's like, and we know how much we dream of the day that we can have our own independence.
Yeah.
But then when we become a parent, we're more on...
Terrified of that independence.
We're more on Marlon's point of view.
It's an interesting movie to watch as a parent. It's a lot of deep emotions, a lot of tears, a lot of moments. You know, this is about fathers and sons, and I'm neither, but I'm close enough to it. So, you know, it still makes my heart feel things.
Yeah, I don't think it just has to be fathers and sons. It's definitely just parents and children.
Yeah.
Not
the way that Brave was, like, specifically about.
That was definitely a mother-daughter relationship. A mother-daughter
story, yeah.
Sure.
Although I do kind of feel like this is a father-son relationship, too. You know, it's not a typical one because, you know, Marlon himself is not a typical father. He's a very neurotic father, but that's also, you know, something that plenty of people understand and feel.
Correct. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Finding Nemo was made for $94 million and made $380 million domestic and $936 million worldwide. Almost $1 billion movie in 2003.
That's insane. It's insane how much money in 2003. Yeah.
I mean, a billion's a lot.
Yeah, a billion's a lot no matter what. But like, it would make more sense these days.
They're hitting billion more often now, which with media sales, I'm sure would have made it cross over a billion.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get exact numbers, but Finding Nemo was released on VHS and DVD in 2003. It became the best-selling movie to ever be released on DVD to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Helps that DVDs are kind of gone away.
But still.
But still, even 20 years, we still had some DVDs being sold. And for 20 years of holding that record's a long time. The two-disc DVD release sold more than 8 million copies on the first day
of release. I was just looking for that on IMDb because I saw that on the...
taking Spider-Man's record for having the highest single-day DVD sales. It also surpassed Monsters, Inc. for having the highest single-day record for an animated movie. And within 2 weeks, it went on to become the best-selling DVD of its time, selling over 15 million copies and beating the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring. Now it has sold over 40 million copies.
Jesus.
And Finding Nemo still holds the record for best-selling DVD release of all time.
That's crazy.
And I think it will keep that record now that DVDs have kind of been done away with.
Makes me wonder what the most sold Blu-ray is. But I'm not going to send this on that rabbit hole. I know you could. And you will tell me later. We'll be on the couch watching New Girl or something. And you'll be like, by the way.
Absolutely. By the way, Maggie, did you know?
And I'll go, oh.
Cool. Okay. Or huh?
Oh.
Finding Nemo was also nominated for 4 Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Best Original Screenplay was one. It lost to Lost in Translation. I think the Best Original Score was the one that was like really massively, like just everybody that was really talented was up for Oscar that year.
For a score. Yeah.
It was just a big year for original score. You had Howard Shore's soundtrack for Return of the King.
Which won.
It did.
And rightfully so.
Big Fish by Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
Gabriel Yard for Cold Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
If people don't know who he is, he also did music for The English Patient and The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, okay.
And then finally, House of Sand and Fog by James Horner was also up for nomination that year.
That's some powerhouses.
That was some big guys.
Yeah, like everything went to the Return of the
Howard
King.
Howard Shore's sound, yeah. I mean, that score is perfect.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. We recently just finished it. Yeah.
Sound editing was another one it was nominated for, which went to Master and Commander, Far Side of the World.
Oh, I love that film.
Pirates of the Caribbean was also nominated for that. And Best Animated Feature, which is what it won.
Mm-hmm.
And it was up against Brother Bear, which I've never seen, but people are crazy for it.
Yeah.
The generation that grew up with it. The parents that took their kids to it didn't like it, but kids who grew up with it were big fans.
Yeah.
And now they're in their 20s, late 20s, and now they are...
oh, God. This movie is 21 years old. Like, I knew that, but then it just kind of hit.
Yeah.
Oh,
kids that watch
God.
These movies are now...
They can drink.
And the Triplets of Belleville, which I have never seen, but I remember wanting to because...
parts of it.
It looked interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I was unfazed at best. It seemed pretentious. I know that's silly, but I just looked at it and went, that looks pretentious. And I just didn't care.
I bet it's great.
Yeah. I mean, also in 2003, I was still in high school. I was, or just freshly out of high school. Like, life was different for me. I don't know if I saw this movie in theater. I had to have gone with a friend to see it in theater, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was a Pixar film and you had to see Pixar films.
In early Pixar years, I made it was appointment film.
But I can't remember, I don't really have any memories of seeing it in theater.
Yeah, I don't know who I went with. I don't know which theater I went to.
I remember seeing Up with you.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Brave with you.
Sure.
Toy Story 3. And subsequent ones to follow, of course, but yeah, I don't have many memories of seeing Finding Nemo with anyone.
Well, Finding Nemo stars Albert Brooks, who is amazing in this movie, and I love his voice, and
I love Albert Brooks. He's just one of those incredible comedians. He's an incredible dramatic actor.
I just found out the other day that his birth name was Albert Einstein.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Didn't know that either. And he had to change it because of Albert Einstein.
Yeah, who's he again?
He didn't want to be him. He didn't want to be an actor.
Yeah.
Called Albert Einstein, which makes
he wouldn't have gotten many roles, no matter how charming he is. My favorite Albert Brooks movie is called My First Mister, with. It's not Chloe Sevigny, but it's just this really small, weird little movie about this, like, older, not older, like, not like old, but like, a 40-something, 50-something man who befriends, like, a teenage girl who works at the mall. And I don't know. It's just, it's a really sweet movie, and it made me really happy. It's Lily Sobieski plays, like, the girl in it, and Carol Kane's in it, John Goodman's in it. It's a really great little film. It came out in 2001, and it was kind of a movie that definitely could be made in 2001, where a 40-something-year-old man befriends a 17-year-old troubled girl at the mall, right, and changes her life and stuff. But it was never there's nothing creepy about it. It's a really just sweet little story. Although on Rotten Tomatoes, it only has a 53%. Whoo! But still, I saw that movie at a formative time, and it made me feel feelings.
I definitely need to watch more Albert Brooks from his earlier work.
Yeah.
I really only know him from Drive, He did was in Weeds for a little bit. He obviously played one of the main characters in the Simpsons movie. He was in A Most Violent Year, which he played a villain, a little fun bad guy role for him in that one.
That was the one with Oscar Isaac, right? A Most Violent Year?
No. Yes.
Yeah, where he plays like a mob boss with Jessica Chastain.
Yep.
Yeah. I never actually did watch that.
No, it's okay.
He's 77, Albert Brooks, these days. I've seen Defending Your Life. I've seen, when I was a lot younger, I saw Lost in America. I feel like I've also maybe have seen Broadcast News.
I was going to say, I may have seen Broadcast News.
Yeah. He was in Drive, which I would need to rewatch. I remember The Muse. I remember
Terms
Mother.
Of Endearment. I've seen Terms of Endearment.
Yeah.
My parents.
Like, he's just one of those guys that was just in so many, he's been in so many things. You know, Private Benjamin, of course I saw him in that. My parents loved Private Benjamin.
I've never seen it.
I was never really a big fan.
Taxi Driver's on our list.
Yeah.
So one day we'll watch that.
Yeah, you know, he's fucking Albert Brooks. He's a delight, you know.
American
he's just
treasure.
So cute. Yeah. And as far as I'm aware, not problematic in any way.
Well, we can always hope. They never are in the beginning.
They never are in the beginning. And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa.
But at 77, you hope that...
Speaking of
problematic, Ellen DeGeneres is also in this movie.
Yeah.
But I do love Dory.
I
like Dory as a character.
I loved Dory up until a point, and then Ellen DeGeneres ruined Dory for me.
Hmm. Was it because of Finding Dory?
No. It was actually before that. This is a really obscure thing.
Okay.
Before Ellen DeGeneres got with Portia de Rossi and married her, she was... I think she was engaged for a long time, Ellen was, to another woman. And I remember watching a, like, behind-the-scenes little documentary thing, or maybe it was, like, a Dateline, like, special on Ellen or something. But I remember watching her talk about how the way that she garnered the emotion at the end of the movie, where Dory tells Marlin, when I look at you, I remember. When I look at you, I'm home. And her, like, voice kind of breaks a little bit. And she talked about how in that moment she was thinking about her current partner and how much she was in love with that woman and how just, like, you know, how that was it. That, you know, she was the only one. She was home for Ellen. And then, like less than a year later, she dumped that woman and hooked up with Portia de Rossi. And then kind of just got progressively worse. But because of that little moment, I was like, well, that's kind of shitty. What a shitty thing to do to somebody. Because it wasn't mutual. It was like, I believe Ellen just flat out dumped her for Portia de Rossi. So it was sort of like, oh, I guess she wasn't home, was she, Ellen? And that kind of taints. That was the beginning of Ellen being tainted for me, actually.
Wow. You're really devoted to people's relationships.
You know what? I don't know. Like, it just made me view her in a different way. Have you heard of the... 9/11 to the fall of Ellen DeGeneres pipeline?
Oh boy. No.
This is okay, so I'm paraphrasing this, but this is kind of all over like TikTok and the internet. Gerard Way, from
My Chemical Romance,
was in 9/11 on the day that it happened, saw it happen, and was like, life's too short. I'm gonna go off and chase my dreams, and started My Chemical Romance, right? Made it big. Helped inspire Stephanie Meyer to write Twilight, right? Because it did. That is well known. And then with the success of Twilight, a woman wrote 50 Shades of Grey, which was originally a Twilight fan fiction, right? That she then like reconfigured to turn into 50 Shades of Grey. 50 Shades of Grey stars Dakota Johnson. Fifty Shades of Grey stars Dakota Johnson. Dakota Johnson gets famous because of that movie.
Yeah.
Right? She ends up going on Ellen a few years later. Ellen makes a joke and lies on camera talking about how, you know, Dakota Johnson didn't invite Ellen to her birthday party. And Dakota Johnson was like, no, Ellen, that's not true. I did invite you. And here's the proof. And that was like the first time that anybody kind of got back at Ellen, and that began the downfall of Ellen DeGeneres. Oh. It's an insane pipeline of of history and pop culture.
Thanks, Gerard Way, for being inspired by a tragedy.
Yeah, that brought about the end of the Ellen DeGeneres era.
That's really interesting.
The DeGeneres-ance.
Wow.
It's bonkers, the connection, but it's real.
We also got Alexander Gould, who plays Nemo.
What does that kid up to these days?
Nothing. The last thing he did was Finding Dory.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
But the only other thing I have ever seen him in, because everything else he's done is only like one or two episodes, small parts and some small movies. But I watched the majority of Weeds, and he plays the main character's youngest son. And so he's very prominent in all of Weeds. Okay. That's probably the biggest thing he's done on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was Nemo.
Yeah, maybe he made some money and he popped off and started a happy life.
I hope he's
okay.
Doing well. Once again, we are faced with another movie featuring Willem Dafoe.
Oh my God, Willem Dafoe has become the face of Movie Mingle, which I'm okay with because it's a face I want to mingle with.
It's either we're talking about him on here,
mm-hmm.
or we go watch, you know, we went and watched Beetlejuice, and he was in that.
Yep.
And
he pops up in all sorts of things.
He was recently in something else that we watched.
Yeah. We've had a lot of Willem Dafoe surprises.
Oh, look, another movie with Willem Dafoe.
Who's sad about it? I love Willem Dafoe.
When we talked about Wall-E, we talked about how great Brad Garrett is.
Mm-hmm. We have lavished a lot of love on him, and he remains delightful in this.
Brad Garrett played Bloat.
The few notes that I wrote down, because I wrote very few notes for this movie, I did write, you know, Brad Garrett is the goat. Because he is.
He is.
Yeah, he's just great.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of fun, especially his voice, because it's so distinctible. Distinctible? So distinct. Allison Janney, of course, played Peach. And we love her West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was in I, Tonya.
Yes, she's incredible. We've talked about her in I, Tonya and how fucking good she is in that movie. She's, again, Allison Janney. Who doesn't love her?
Hairspray, she's great. Juno, she's great. Another actress that everything she does is just great. Stephen Root as Bubbles.
I don't care if they lay me off either, because I told Bill that if they move my desk one more time, then I'm quitting. I'm going to quit. And I told Dom, too, because they've moved my desk four times already this year, and I used to be over by the window, and I could see the squirrels, and they were married, but then they switched.
Always love him. Jeffrey Rush as Nigel.
Oh, I had a thing for Jeffrey Rush. I think he's kind of somewhat problematic these days. I don't know. I know something big happened in Australia. I'm not quite sure on the details. Like, he sued a newspaper for false claims, and it was a big thing. But nonetheless, you know, I don't care. I loved him so much growing up. Like, he was one of my, like, older crushes as a young 20-something that people would go, really? And I'd be like, hell yeah, Jeffrey Rush. And it was all because of Quills. I saw that movie and was turned on since then.
Quills is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in ages.
Probably over a decade.
Yeah, and I don't know if I would revisit it, but fuck was I attracted to him in that movie.
The director, Andrew Stanton, played the voice of Crush.
Mm-hmm. In true fashion, he recorded all the lines just to be kind of, you know, inserted footage, and it ended up being so liked that they just kept it.
Squirt is played by Brad Bird's son, Nicholas Bird, who I'm looking at a picture of Nicholas Bird right now, and he looks like Brad Bird. It's pretty funny how much it's him. Bruce the Shark was played by Barry Humphreys. He's played just things forever. British stuff.
Oh, Australian.
I'm sorry, Australian stuff. I think some British TV.
Mm-hmm.
But he was in The Hobbit. He played the Great Goblin.
Yeah.
I love Bruce the Shark. I mean, the fact that he's named after the movie Jaws's fake shark, or, you know, the shark that was filmed and they had so many problems with on set.
Eric Bana. Yeah,
Eric Bana's anchor. Who's anchor? Oh, is that
he's the hammerhead shark.
Hammerhead, okay. Yeah. I was trying to figure out who played Is Chum...
Chum's the one with, like, the nose ring who ate his little fish friend. Yeah.
Oh, he's the gyrocopter guy from Mad Max 2 The Road Warrior. I know that character. I was looking
live, at his... Lifetime IMDb in, folks. Just it is a thing out, that happens Bruce here at Spence, Movie Mingle.
Bruce Spence played should have prayed Bruce. Road Warrior.
Bruce, and myself, yeah. You know the Bruce song from Monty Python, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. The Philosopher's song, yeah.
Yes. Yes, I do. Maybe we'll insert here. Yeah, and that's our main cast. Great cast.
It's a very emotional film.
Like a lot of Pixar films.
It's a sweet film. It's, you know, it's Finding Nemo. We all know
a little bit of coming of age.
What Finding Nemo?
Little coming of age meets
yeah.
parent letting go.
Mm-hmm.
Not being such a helicopter parent. Terrible tragedy happened to this family at the very beginning.
Yeah. Well, is it a tragedy or is it just nature?
I mean, now you're getting into more.
I mean, a barracuda ate Marlin's wife and all of his children, hundreds of children.
From Marlin's point of view,
yeah, it's
it was a
huge tragedy.
Well,
no, don't get me wrong. But also, it's not like the barracuda wasn't acting out of maliciousness. The barracuda was just eating.
Yes.
Barracuda.
Circle of life.
Yeah. Oh, man. Rest in peace to the goat. James Earl Jones, man. That one hurt.
You know, one question I had towards the beginning of this movie, once we get to Nemo starting his first day of school, is asking a clownfish to tell a joke politically correct in the fish world?
Maybe back in 2003, but not today.
Also, could you say that Marlin used a racial slur towards the seahorse when he called him a pony boy?
I don't know. I guess I don't... I don't know how the fish
what
world,
are the rules of,
what are the rules of different species when it comes to the fish world where there is nothing but different species,
how
right?
is society treated?
Yeah.
Fish society.
Like, are salmon on top? Are shrimp considered...
Bottom feeders.
I mean, they're bottom feeders, but are they considered bottom feeders?
Probably.
You know, we know where seagulls stand.
Mine.
I don't know. It could be that, them asking Marlin to tell him a joke, even though he's a clownfish, but he's not that funny, could, you know, it's definitely derogatory. Let's just put it that way. What it means in the fish universe, I don't know, but I would say yes, there is some derogatory terms to it. But maybe not intentionally, maybe it is unintentional that, you know, it's just, that's how those fish were raised.
That's...
I don't know. You put me in a spot here. What am I going to say?
So a barracuda ate all the fish. Nemo's the last one. He grows up. He goes off to kindergarten. He's got a bad fin.
Yeah.
He touched the butt. And got taken by a dentist. And
of all the places you could have ended up, a dentist.
A dentist.
Yeah. The dentist is, I mean, he's not the bad guy of the movie. He's kind of the main antagonist, but he's not the bad guy because he genuinely was just being a dumb human thinking that he was saving a fish, right? He thought he was saving Nemo because Nemo was too far out from the reef and Nemo's got his little fin. So the guy was just like, oh, I'm going to save this little creature who's all by himself and take him home, not realizing that he has a family and people that love him, fish that love him. He cleans the tank. Like he's a good fish father.
He's not the best dentist, though.
No, he's definitely not the best dentist. I would not want to go to him as a dentist.
So unsanitary.
Yes. He doesn't wash his hands after the bathroom.
Nope.
I like when he accidentally pulls the prime minister's tooth out of his mouth. Like, he's a... For being kind of a high-end dentist, he's not great.
Also, I think... I'm not... I don't think I would ever be... I don't think I will ever be into aquariums.
Like no.
owning an aquarium, even a
no.
small one. I don't like the idea of animals being stuck in one spot.
Yeah, well, you say that as producer Robin sits staring out the window, desperately
dreaming
waiting for his boy to come home, dreaming of the day he can escape this tiny apartment and be free.
Yeah, but at least he's not in a cage in a corner.
True.
Just sitting there.
Yeah, no, that is true. He at least gets to roam around the 12 square feet we allow him to roam around in our home.
Oh, it's more than 12 feet. It's 15.
It's 15, yeah. Our apartment's bigger than that. It's 15. but no, I agree. I never have been
a
big fan of fish. I don't believe in keeping birds as pets. Growing up, we had finches a lot. My parents had lovebirds that lasted forever. My mom would have cockatiels that hated me. Do you remember that bitchy gray one? So
fucking loud.
So fucking angry.
And they just, they're just continuous noise.
Yeah. It's worse. Squawking, whistling.
Worse than a dog just continuously barking.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I've never, those are pets that I don't fancy. We had a goldfish for a long time.
Same. I've had many goldfish in my life, but I really don't want another one.
Not in a long time. Yeah. We haven't. Robin is our first pet since we've, you know, moved out of California a decade ago, and he's a fairly recent addition to the family. We definitely didn't, you know, we're not pet people, per se. Also, like, fish are stinky. Bowl gets stinky. You gotta...
supposed to clean it.
Well, yeah, but, like, even when you didn't, like, the fish food is stinky.
Oh, yeah, it's all...
like, it's all just kind of gross. And also, being in aquariums makes me extremely nauseous.
Yes, that glass.
The magnification of the glass and the water.
Like when we went to the Mirage the day after we got so drunk.
Never go hungover to an aquarium. It will destroy you. Like
we had to take a moment and just sit down and not.
We took an hour.
And not look. Yeah. At anything.
And that was all because somebody insisted that we went, even though we were both so hungover we couldn't stand it, but it was part of the itinerary. Robin, go.
It sounded like fun.
It sounded like fun at the time, but now every time I see that, like every time I see an aquarium, my immediate reaction is, yeah.
I think this is the first time I watched this movie and really saw how the animation had aged. It used to be, I feel like Finding Nemo used to be one of those movies where it's just like, the animation just looked so...
Sir, stop it.
...amazing and perfect, and everything underwater was very good, and then a lot of stuff above water was not as good.
I don't think I clocked any of that. It still looks so magical.
Especially, I haven't watched Finding Dory in a while.
No, I only saw that once.
I'm... sure, I could watch that and just see how much better, more happens above water in Finding Dory. So I think they...
Yeah, but what did you want it to look like? Photorealistic?
No.
Because even the underwater stuff doesn't look necessarily
photorealistic. But even compared to new, you know, I'm comparing it to current animation and current Pixar. Yeah,
this was 21 years ago.
And this is the first time that I've noticed it has aged.
That's fair. I mean...
I've watched it many times before, never really...
Yeah, you know, the animation as
aged.
Yeah. Well, you know, technology advances.
No,
you know, this was, at the time, a massive technological achievement.
Oh, yeah. Now, when this came out, this was...
Yeah.
Nobody had made...
Underwater stuff? Yeah. Like, that was insane.
The reef, the fish. I mean, you compare this movie to Will Smith's fish movie.
Fish Tale?
Shark Tale.
Oh, Shark Tale, yeah. I've never seen it.
That's terrible. The story, but even the animation.
Yeah, the animation's bad. But DreamWorks has never and could never do what Pixar does. They got lucky with Shrek and End of Sentence.
I think you'll be really surprised when we get around to watching Puss in Boots, Last Wish.
Mm-hmm. I know the animation's a lot different.
Animation's a lot different, but in a good way.
Yeah.
And the story...
I'm so excited to watch that, considering how many people I know love it.
It's better than what a lot of newer Pixar movies have been.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we don't need to go down the whole of newer Pixar hasn't lived up to the hype, but nothing is sustainable, right? Like, even Pixar isn't sustainable. It's always got to be more movies, more, especially anything under Disney. It's got to be more movies, more money for more movies.
And it's got
to
be every
but less
year.
Money to make movies. And it's got to be every year. And, you know, it's... We love Disney, but they're greedy.
Yeah, right? Everything gets watered down.
Yeah.
Including the quality.
Yeah. And it's just that this is the way. It's sad that it's that way, but this is the way. You know, if they made Lord of the Rings tomorrow, it wouldn't be nearly the classic that it is today because it would all be CG and fake.
So the inspiration for Finding Nemo was Andrew Stanton's childhood.
He got abducted by a dentist and his dad had to cross planet.
He had to shove himself into a tank filter. And
oh God, it's horrific.
A bunch of like four bums helped him. Maybe he's a good therapist. Now, when he was a kid, he loved going to the dentist to see the fish tank. He assumed that the fish were from the ocean and that they wanted to go back to their home. In 1992, after his son was born, him and his family took a trip to Six Flags, back when it was called Discovery Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's called like Marine World or something. But after he had seen a shark, like a shark tube and various exhibits, he really felt like the underwater world could be recreated in a computer. And later in 1997, so like 5 years later, him and his son were walking in the park and he realized how overprotective he was being of his son. And he was so concentrated on that he completely lost the opportunity to have a good just father-son experience that day. So a few things from his own life that he took from that got the ball rolling. He was reading a National Geographic magazine and saw a picture of a clownfish. I guess the clownfish in the picture were peeking out of an anemone.
Mm-hmm.
And little experiences from your life or other people's lives, and it all just gets put together in one big, beautiful story.
You know, it's hard being a parent and learning that fine line of, like, letting your kids go off and be independent and walk to their friend's house or, you know, play at the park without you too nearby, right? Like, it's hard. It's, you know, it's a lesson that we've had to juggle a lot. There are times where our kid wants to go to the park, so we let them. And then, like, a half an hour later, we're suddenly super paranoid because they're not answering their phone because one of us gets a little, you know, a little anxiety goblin pops up and is like, is your kid okay? And it flips you out, right? The world has always been dangerous for children, but it is so dangerous for children. And they're your kids. They're your everything. They're little human beings you created and brought into this world. You die for them. And it can be stressful. Like, I understand where Marlin comes from. I myself am, I'm not a super overprotective mom, but I have my moments. You know, and you do too.
Absolutely.
But we also have to
let them have some independence, but you also want to make sure that they're going to come home at the end of the night.
Yeah. Like, you want a 12-year-old to be a 12-year-old, but you want a 12-year-old to be safe. This movie is also very dear to me as a parent because our firstborn watched this movie
a lot.
Nonstop.
Yeah. Really loved this movie a lot.
They really loved this
movie. Over and over and over and over.
I remember. There was definitely stages where it would be like Finding Nemo, The Muppets, Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, Peter Pan for a short time. And I know we've talked about this in the past, but man, Finding Nemo was on a lot in our house, which kind of does dull the shine of a movie a little bit.
A little bit.
A lot.
But they have not been that age in a very long time. So we also have not watched it in a long time.
And it was nice to
revisit. So rewatching it, it was fun and not annoying. I guess William H. Macy was originally cast as Marlin and recorded the majority of the dialogue for the movie.
Yeah.
And
somewhere I feel like I've seen footage of his Marlin.
And Stanton felt like the character needed a lighter touch and they cast Albert Brooks. And in Stanton's opinion, it saved the film.
I mean, it kind of sucks for William H. Macy, but he got paid.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know.
I'm sure there's... I wish YouTube would show me more of all these recordings. And, like, I would love to just watch a lot of this unused footage and audio.
I want to see the... I want to see the rated R cut of Aladdin, thanks to Robin Williams. Like, I want to see the NC-17 cut of The Genie.
I want to see all the footage that What's-His-Face filmed for Back to the Future.
There's a lot of that online.
Is it all
online? Eric Stoltz?
Yeah.
I was thinking of the guy who's the bad guy in Ant-Man. I wanted to see fucking Edgar Wright's Ant-Man.
Yeah, that would have been...
And it's not even that it exists. It doesn't exist anymore. But God, I want to see it.
And supposedly there's a bunch of outtakes of Albert Brooks telling all these really terrible jokes.
Yes.
I guess they had him...
But he's such a funny man. They had him
record a lot of bad jokes. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure they were all off the top of his head.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
You know, he's a professional.
Tell jokes bad, but they're bad jokes.
Well, yeah, but he's also a professional comedian, and he can do it. He's Albert fucking Brooks. He's Albert fucking Brooks.
I mean, what do you say about a movie that's over 20 years old?
That everybody's seen.
That's everybody's seen that's a thousand beloved. Times.
Yeah.
The Turtles are amazing. They really do add like an extra layer to the movie, especially how old the main turtle crush mm-hmm. is and his experience and wisdom and what he tells Marlin and is kind of what gets Marlin to think things a little differently.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta let your kids go eventually. Whether that's giving them a little bit of more independence or when it comes time for them to move out, you know.
Oh, God.
Right.
That's not kicking them out at 25.
Oh, we can kick them out at 25. That's fine. Equal opportunity.
Yeah. Finding Nemo for me, you know, I kind of, because our kid watched it so much, I'll always associate it with them. You know, it's always that thing where I hear the music and I automatically think of just our little kid sitting, you know, running around in front of the TV playing with all their toys while Finding Nemo played on in the background. Like, it's such a sweet movie. It's such a beautiful movie. I know it's dangerous for them, but, like, the scene with the jellyfish is incredible. I had forgotten about the School of Fish played by John Ratzenberger.
Yeah.
Until I saw them and immediately was like, oh my God, like that part is so funny in the way that each fish individually is luminescent and like lights up and
especially the marquee sign that yes. they make by just and they make the lights blink mm-hmm. by just making their gills or their scales.
When they do the pirate light. Ship and one of the fishes like walks the plank. Oh God, it's so clever.
Oh, it's a whale of a tale, I'll tell you, lad, a whale of a tale.
Oh, they're good.
Would somebody please give me directions?
You know, I love the shark bit, because who doesn't? And who doesn't, you know, shark bait, ooh-ah. You know, you have to. You just have to.
Ooh, bah, but
let's talk about Willem Dafoe as a fish.
He's a...
Still attractive.
Of course he is.
He's Willem Dafoe. He's never not hot.
Even with his scars.
Even with his scars and his stinky like, oh, fish.
That makes him
well, even yeah, hotter like, fish. I mean, look at Willem Dafoe's face. It's unique. It's worn. It's lived in.
I like that they made a fish. If a Willem Dafoe fish is going to look like something,
Willem Dafoe.
That's pretty good representation
yeah,
of
right.
a Willem Dafoe fish.
The sun is shining. The tank is clean. The tank is clean. You know, we all love this movie. We all quote it a ton. I'm trying to think if I have any memories of like all the time we spent at Disneyland and any sort of, oh, the Finding Nemo ride at Disneyland. They turned the old submarines
oh, yes.
into the Finding Nemo ride.
Did you ever go to Disneyland with the old school?
Yeah. Ride? Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. I had definitely Same. Seen it when it was like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea esque. And then I only saw it once when they converted it to the Finding Nemo thing, because going on those submarines freaks me out. I get very claustrophobic on those things because they're so hot. They're so small. You're packed in there like sardines, pun intended.
They really are.
You know that you're not, if you're not the first, if you're not the last person getting in, then it takes forever to get out, right? Like, you have to wait for so long for people to load in and out of those things.
You definitely don't want to be the first one in the submarine.
No, no, you're
have,
in there
especially
for,
if you have an issue
yeah.
with being in a tight space.
You're in there for an extra 10 minutes on either side of the ride just waiting for people to get off. And the line was always insane.
So long.
Insanely long.
So long for what it actually is.
Yeah.
Like, it's not...
Hey, you never
like
go underwater. You just go in a big circle.
Yeah.
And half the time, you're not even in water. It's all... just, you know, Disney magic. Because the second you go under the waterfall, or go through the waterfall, you're going into a like a dry, dark ride, basically, but you're still stuck on that hot, sticky, stinky, claustrophobic submarine. And, oh, it's just terrible. Oh, it's terrible. But when they did redo the ride and they put the seagulls out in the middle of, you know, the bay, basically, and they would occasionally go, mine, 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 mine. I've got an affinity for seagulls. I've hated them for so long, but now they're starting to become beloved to me.
They are...
avian cunt buckets.
Yes, they are rats with wings.
They are.
Like, they... or raccoons with wings is an even better way of putting it.
Because they're very smart.
They're smart.
And they are disgusting.
They can lift a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
The trash cans that we have outside my work, there's just trash cans all along the sidewalk. And there are sometimes we get to work and there's just garbage everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like somebody went through. We used to think that it was people going through our trash at night and just leaving a mess on the ground and just trying to get food. We thought it was people because it was every trash can and it was just so much trash on the sidewalks in the morning. And we eventually found out that it was seagulls doing it. Between the seagulls and the crows. But mostly seagulls, just because they're bigger birds and they can lift more. And they'll put their whole head in the trash can and just start pulling stuff out. And then there's just a mob of seagulls that will go after it. So yeah, they're just like raccoons with wings. They just...
when I worked at the fancy fine dining fish restaurant, we had a customer who was always like the first customer there every single day. She was a regular. She was always waiting for the front door to be opened. And as soon as it was opened, she was in there going right to her table at the bar where she got like four drinks and fish and chips. Or it was baby prawns and chips, right? So it was small shrimp and chips. The seagulls knew her because she would always have one of the bussers take her fries and go throw them out the door of the deck to the seagulls. So there was always like a sentry seagull who would sit across from her table waiting every single day. And as soon as she arrived, he would squawk to let everybody know that she was there. And then he would sit and he would wait. And eventually she'd be done with her dish and she would push her fries to the end of the table. And that was her sign that she was done. As soon as she did that, the sentry would start squawking again and more seagulls would come, right? And then within no time, one of the bussers would go out and hork the fries all over the deck, and it'd be a feeding frenzy, and the seagulls would just be like,
mine,
yeah, just absolutely going nuts for the fries. And those fucking seagulls waited for every single day. They knew her routine, and eventually it got to the point where management had to stop that practice because of how much shit was on the deck. And then, you know, once the spring and summer came and the deck was open for business, you know, like, we couldn't have the seagulls shitting everywhere, but they did anyways. I mean, I can't tell you how many, you know, I got shit on while working on the deck out there. We had tables that would get shit on. We'd have to replace meals and drinks from time to time. Like, but I still just kind of love them. I don't know. They're such idiots, but having been around them as much as we have for the last decade, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't want one as a pet at all. But I just kind of like them. I like the sound that they make. Like the, nope, that's a peacock. The, nope, that's also not great. That's not a good seagull. I'm not good at seagull impressions.
I think we're going to cut out seagull impressions.
You should or leave not, them in. Not leave them in. If you've got a great seagull impression, please email it to moviemanglepod@gmail.com. I love when Dory is trying to get information about where Marlin went, and the crab is quite literally being a crab to her. It's like, oh, I saw a clownfish, but I'm not going to tell you where it is. And she pushes him up out of the water, and the seagulls realize what's going. Mine? Okay, I'll tell you. Whatever you want. Like,
he's being part, awfully crabby.
That part cracks me up.
Do you have
yes.
a line from this movie that you just say in everyday life? A specific one or a couple. I mean, I have a couple. And I'll just say them first while you think.
Yeah.
Mine is saying mine.
Yeah.
It's just something that you start doing at work and like coworkers will just period, it's like start it up and Everybody just starts doing
mine. You're around a group of people and you go, mine? At least one other person's like, mine, mine. Right. Yeah.
And then, of course, when the crabs are like, hey, 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 hey.
Yeah, that's one that I do a lot as well. I feel like I should, because I feel like when I was watching this movie, there were a few things that popped up that I was just like, oh, yeah, that's something that
there was something that popped up
all too often.
And I didn't write it down.
Yeah.
And then I later wrote down the hey, hey, and the mine, mine. Because I was like, I do say these things, and then I couldn't think of what the first thing was that I use too much, probably.
Oh, my God. Jacques.
Oh.
The little crab.
Yes.
The little shrimp, the cleaner shrimp that lives in the fish tank, is, like, along with Mo, one of my favorite Pixar characters ever. Definitely top five favorite Pixar characters for me is Jacques in the tank. When Jacques is cleaning the tank, although he's not supposed to be, and Willem Dafoe Fish is like, Jacques, don't clean. And Jacques pulls away and he's got a little algae mustache. He goes, I am ashamed. It slays me. I love him. I can't see Bubbles without Bubbles.
Yeah.
It's one of
Flo? Has anybody seen my sister Flo?
It's so silly that the way that, like, pop culture has taken over my vocabulary, but it always has been that way.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Of course. You say random lines that fit certain situations, mm-hmm. And you...
All day, every day.
And you do kind of wait for those moments of somebody recognizing that what you just did, and you just get to have that moment with a coworker or somebody else, a friend, and you're just...
Swim away!
Oh, yeah, krill.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's fun. It can be fun to get other people in on your references. And I know references sometimes get annoying for people, but
especially when they're references that, like, they don't get.
I do references that people don't get
all the time.
And then I'm just waiting. But in my head, I'm like, people should know this.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at the people I work with. I'm like, oh, well, you're probably too young.
It has gotten to the point where the amount that I quote 30 Rock on a daily basis is frankly obscene.
I say... corn.
I can't
almost
say
every time a case corn. Of corn shows
yeah.
up.
Like it is literally the only way that I can say corn. Same with ham. Like I quote 30 Rock daily. Yesterday I said to a customer who was like, oh, I'm good. I don't need help carrying all my stuff to the front of the store. I used to be a server. And I went, like a waitress, lemon. Like I can't not quote 30 Rock.
Right.
It's in my DNA at this point, which makes me both laugh because I'm the only one doing it, and also just like if anybody ever catches on, it makes me so happy.
Right.
Yeah. And there have been a few times. It's a glorious moment when somebody's like, oh, I get that.
The other two lines from Finding Nemo that I do say probably too much is just keep swimming.
Mm-hmm.
Just to keep myself motivated
just
and
keep swimming. Just keep swimming.
And not tire out and want to quit. And then which I think when I used to go on my long bike rides, mm-hmm. I think I used to say, just keep swimming to myself. And then another line is, I touch the butt.
Well, you do like to touch the butt, from my experience.
Well, you know, it's just sticking out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a boat in the harbor.
A boat in the harbor, just floating in my direction.
One of the notes that I wrote down, which will make you laugh, I hope, is what do you think a Octonauts and Finding Nemo crossover would look like?
Finding Nemo and the Octonauts.
The Octonauts, yeah. If you don't know what the Octonauts is, it was a British, like, children's cartoon. It was really popular on Disney, like, Junior. You can still find it, I'm pretty sure, on the Disney Plus. And it was about these animals, a polar bear, a penguin, a cat, you know, all these anthropomorphic animals that are deep sea exploration rescuers, essentially.
Essentially.
And they did things like, you know, fixing a vampire squid who had his little claw was caught in his little vampire squid cape. And, you know, they touched on climate change a lot. They helped rescue jellyfish and fucking whales and crab, and they went down into the Mariana Trench and they, you know, almost froze to death in the Arctic. And our kids were obsessed with the Octonauts.
I've seen so many episodes of
Sheldon the Otter is one of my, like, cartoon boyfriends. Nice. I'm so in love with him. Octonauts was a huge thing in our house. So much so that, was it Christmas this past year that our son wanted Octonauts toys? Yeah,
this
toys,
last Christmas.
Even though he's a tween?
Yeah, he's so close. He, at the time, he was 11.
Yeah.
But still, it was very odd to hear that his...
But that's what he wanted.
That's what he wanted, yeah. He wanted Octonauts
toys. And then he took them into the bathtub and he played with them. Which he probably doesn't want me announcing to the internet at whole, but here we are. Here like, he loved those toys. Octonauts was huge in our house.
I think it's a little bit of a nostalgia. He's at the age now where he's already missing his...
his childhood.
His toddler years.
He's halfway through his childhood and he's like, no...
Not memories, yet, I'm not ready. Not yet.
I mean, we've all been there. But my parents would have laughed me out of the fucking house if I had asked for, like...
You want what?
What? Yeah.
Those are for babies.
I would like to, though, think of, like, Quasi and Sheldon helping, you know, helping Marlin find Nemo. Like, I think it would just be really cute. The animation style especially, you know...
The Octonauts definitely would have helped Marlin find Nemo.
Oh, they absolutely would have.
Yeah. Oh, you lost your son? We'll help you scour the entire...
Octonauts, to the rescue!
Quasi, sound the octo alert.
If you have something...
I was just going to say, I was about to ask if you would travel the oceans to save your children, but I know that you would because you're a great dad. Yeah.
I couldn't swim that far, but...
No, but you'd make it.
I'd figure out a way.
I'd go to Australia if I had to.
If my kids, if I found out my kids have been taken to Australia,
yeah,
and I need to go...
To Australia.
To Australia to get them. Of course I'm going to Australia.
And I'm finding Hugh Jackman. Yeah. And I'm having him take in my kids back.
Yes. He has many skills.
Oh my God. Could you imagine if they redid Taken with anyone but with Hugh Jackman? Hugh Jackman just spends the latter part of his career just remaking all Liam Neeson's movies.
You know, I'm speaking of Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson's.
Liam Neeson's is my shiznit.
Another thing that we quote relentlessly that people may or may not get.
That's fine.
Yeah. That's great.
If you don't
get
it, then get out more. Or no, stay in more.
Yeah.
Watch more
Watch
TV.
More television, folks. We here at Movie Mangle.
Movie Mangled? We're Movie Mangled.
We have a little bit.
Been mangled by movies.
I've had a few beers today, but not that many.
I managed not to tear up a lot during this movie because in the past I remember
being
a little more choked up at certain
especially
scenes,
when our kids were younger.
And I was doing super well.
Mm-hmm.
But it was when at the very end when Nemo, he's going back off with his classmates.
Yeah.
And he swims back real fast.
To hug his dad.
And he gives his dad a hug and says, "Love you, Dad."
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
It's hard too because our children have progressed into
higher education. Middle
school and high school now.
They're older.
And so they're not our little kids anymore.
They're not our little kids anymore, no.
I mean, you know, one of our children came in during this recording, gave us each a kind of quasi-hug. We asked how school was. They replied, fine.
Yeah, and then now I probably won't see them till dinner.
No, they just off into the bedroom. Yeah. And then the other kid just sent a text being like, can I go home with a friend?
Yeah, didn't even get off on his bus stop.
Nope,
got off on his friend's bus stop. Yeah.
And we were like, have fun.
Probably won't see him for another 3 hours.
Yeah.
So,
it's
but
crazy.
we still get hugs.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, our kids
we still
are very
get
affectionate.
We still get I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad.
I hope we never don't
lose it.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, guys, I told my parents I loved them well into my teenagehood. As a girl, I was more physically affectionate with my parents too. But we'll see how our kids progress. But they were our little fish, little baby fish, and
fish.
Now they're.
I mean,
there?
Talking about letting your kids have a little more independence.
Yeah.
The fact that we just let our son
get
off on a completely different bus and not even we're not even checking in with him. I mean, he texted me and said that he's at...
And we have his location on our phone, so we know where he is, too.
And that's the other thing. We live in a time... When I was 12, I didn't have any way of communicating.
Oh, yeah, no, except for
my
landlines.
Friends. Yeah, landlines. Yeah.
And remembering your home phone number.
Sure, and I still do.
Yeah, I still remember mine. Nowadays we kind of have our children lowjacked in a way because since we have their locations on our phones, we can see where they are at any given point.
Right.
As long as they have their phones on them, of course, but their kids, when do they not?
School,
when
hopefully.
I was in the sixth grade, you know, if I wanted to go home with a friend after school, not only would I have to ask my parents about it beforehand and they would have to ask their parents, but then like my mom would write a note saying, to whom it may concern, please allow Maggie to get on this bus and go home with their friend. I've approved it. And if you need anything, here's my phone number. Blah, blah,
blah, blah. Have the whole thing notarized.
Yeah. And like written in blood.
Like witnessed by somebody who works for the school. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, it, you know, it can be hard to let your children go. And let them grow. Let them get hurt. Let them experience life.
Good, the good and the bad.
Yeah. And, you know, it's beautiful that movies like this can exist to show that it's such a human thing, right? It's a shared human experience.
We all go through it. We grow up. Yeah. We have kids. We watch them grow up.
Yeah.
And then they have kids, maybe.
And just like watching the generations continue and hoping that you did your best and picking up the pieces when you fail and making things better when you do something wrong, saying you're sorry to your kids, saying, you know, reminding them that even if you are angry at them, you still love them, you know, letting them be comfortable, letting them be afraid, letting them be their own people. And even if they are little fish, like we're just a cute little fish with little fins. I don't know how long Clownfish lived, but I assume that Nemo and his dad are dead at this point.
Jesus. Wow, that just took this podcast in a whole nother direction.
Just saying, I don't think fish live in the 20s.
Of all, they are frozen forever in film.
Yes, no, they will live forever.
And I could see Pixar doing a Finding Somebody 3.
Yeah. Maybe Marlin's got to go look for his grandkid.
Nemo loses his son.
Oh, my God. Now it's Nemo and Marlin.
Nemo's grown up.
Yeah. I don't know what a third one would look like, but I don't... I remember Finding Dory being sweet, and I remember it making me cry in the way that Pixar has an innate ability of reaching into my face and squeezing my eyeballs until tears come out, whether I want them to or not, because I haven't not cried at a Disney movie since Finding Nemo.
I mean, all I need to say is the first 10 minutes of Up.
Fucking, I know. Or just Coco. All of Coco.
Jesus.
You know.
Remember me. Ugh.
Even Onward, which I didn't like that much, made me fucking weep my face off at the end of it.
I loved that movie, and I haven't watched it a second time because
it made me cry so
much. My throat hurts so bad afterwards.
That was the movie that made me go, you know what? I'm kind of done with this torture.
Like, Coco can do it. But Coco is still so much fun because of the visuals.
Yeah.
And the story and the characters. It's not all just a...
I have some regrets around Coco.
A daughter not remembering or starting to not remember
her father. Yeah.
It's not just about that. It is the saddest part of that movie.
I only ever saw it once, so yeah.
So good.
But I have some Coco regrets that we'll talk about when we get to Coco.
Sure.
But
I tried to get one of our kids to watch Coco one time and they ran away.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely refused to watch it because of death and how it related to a kid and his family.
The eldest?
Yes.
Yeah. That makes sense. But Pixar's gotten to the point where, like, they know how to make you cry, so they just, it's emotional terrorism. You're crying whether you want to or not. At least Finding Nemo for me was, you know, more authentic tears. Right, seeing it before having children, seeing it after having children. I definitely got a little sniffied at the end of it, you know, a little teary-eyed. Maybe not full-on, like, blubbering like today at the end of The Return of the King. But, you know, it's no Endgame. No movie makes me cry like Endgame. And I think every time I watch it, I think to myself, oh, this is going to be the time I don't ugly cry. And then I cry so hard, it debilitates me for an afternoon. That's going to be really fun to talk about when we finally get to it. And in fact, I think that you should have the recording ready to go just so that you can get me at the end of Endgame being like, T'Challa.
Just have a microphone plugged in next to you.
Just to hear my thoughts the entire time. It'd be fun.
That would live reaction.
Mm-hmm. But Finding Nemo, it's a great film. I know this isn't the longest episode ever, but what do you say about Finding Nemo? It's sweet. We all know the story. We all know the behind-the-scenes stuff. You know, who would your favorite character be in Finding Nemo?
It's either going to be Marlin or Gil.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe is absolutely like top tier character.
Yeah,
he's a great surrogate dad, adoptive dad for a moment, I guess you could say.
I think it's because the actors between the actors who were playing them,
yeah,
and how great their characters are. Those are my top two favorite characters in the movie.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. Albert Brooks is a phenomenal comedian, and I will always love him. Willem Dafoe has a face that I want to eat, and will always, you know, the same way I felt about Donald Sutherland, I will feel about Willem Dafoe. He's just eternal babe, and he even makes kind of a hot fish, and I'm not ashamed of that. So, thanks for that, Disney. Thanks for that.
So, Maggie, what would you give Finding Nemo out of 5 stars?
I would give it a 4.5. It is a beautiful classic. It's a great story. It, you know, it means a lot to me as a parent. It means a lot to me as memories with our oldest kid. It means a lot to me from, you know, walking past the Matterhorn and seeing those seagulls out there on that little tiny body of water. You know, it's Finding Nemo. What else can it be? It's a 4.5.
It's a great movie.
It's a great film, yeah.
Between the music, the acting, the story, the lessons.
We didn't even talk about Beyond the Sea being played at the end, which is the song that we, not that Beyond version, because that was the Royal Crown Review version, but actually, I mean, it was, but yeah, we danced to that song at our wedding.
Yeah, wasn't it Bobby Darin Jr. who sang the credits on this one?
I just had his name in my head. It's Robbie...
Didn't Bobby Darin Jr. Nope. do a cover, though?
Yeah, Bobby Darin did a version of Beyond the Sea, and then Kevin Spacey did a version of it when he did the Bobby Darin biopic.
Such a good version,
And too. Then the Royal Crown Review sang a version of it, and that's the version that we danced to at our wedding for our first song. And by our wedding, I mean the little tiny... party we had in our apartment afterwards.
We had a reception in our apartment. Yeah, we got to dance.
It was a small one. And then Robbie Williams, British singer Robbie Williams, does the version Beyond the Sea for this particular movie.
Oh.
Yes. And it took me a while to get there, but I got there. But yes, Finding Nemo, 4.5 for me. What about you, caveman?
I also... would choose 4.5.
Okay.
It's, yeah.
It's Finding Nemo.
It's Finding Nemo.
You know, it's not a 5-star film for me, the way that, like, Ratatouille and WALL-E are, but it's not a 1.
And it's...
it's no Whiplash.
It's not quite up there for me compared to The Incredibles, but it's, like, right behind it.
It's just, it's a classic. It's a,
yeah.
It's one of the many classics that Pixar made.
I love the story. Like I said, the visuals make this movie what it is.
Oh, my God. And we also didn't talk about probably my favorite sequence in the film. I know we're going off a little bit. But the telephone of Marlin telling the story to the turtles about what he's doing and how it spreads across the ocean until it eventually reaches Nemo. Like, it's great, especially with the lobsters when it's wicked dark down there. Hey, Bob.
Marlin doesn't want to tell the story,
mm-hmm.
and then he starts telling it, and then it just gets retold, and it makes its way all the way to Nemo, and as soon as Nemo hears it, that's what inspires him to try again with the filter and put the rock in it.
Because he knows that his father loves him.
And is looking for him.
And it gives him hope.
Is on his way, and so it's like, well, if my dad... can fight sharks,
yeah,
and you know, do all this
cross the ocean
to reach me, then I can swim up in a filter and put a rock in it. And
yeah, it's Finding Nemo. It's great.
So, Maggie.
Yes, caveman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it.
Somehow Palpatine returned.
Would the sweet, sultry voice of one Oscar Isaac have made Finding Nemo a better film?
It wouldn't have made it worse. Yes, I would have liked to have heard Oscar Isaac's perfect, beautiful voice, his sultry, dulcet tones in Finding Nemo. Absolutely, because I think he belongs in every movie in some capacity. So yes, it definitely would have made it better. Yeah.
Second question.
Mm-hmm.
What character would you have had Oscar Isaac play?
That is a tricky one now, isn't it? Because this movie is three main characters and a handful of secondary characters and then a lot of cameos. He's not Australian, so he couldn't have been the Pelican, Nigel. He could have been one of the guys in the tank, like Bubbles, or the one that's the clinophobic, the germophobic fish. Easily he could have been, like, I don't want to take out Brad Garrett because, you know, or Allison Janney or Willem Dafoe. So, yeah, I think I would make him, like, I'd probably replace his character with Stephen Root, or Stephen Root with him, I should say. He would make a great Marlin if they ever remade it, you know, because why not? If they wanted to gender bend Dory and just turn Dory into Oscar Isaac, I would love that too. Yeah, I just, he's make just a little meatball man, and he's made of meatball meat, and I love him.
He could play the Stingray.
He could have played the teacher. Yeah. Well, there's nothing to see here. yeah, I mean, why not put Oscar Isaac in everything? He just makes me so happy. And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it for you and revisiting Finding Nemo, a sweet little movie from our history. Who doesn't love it? Coming up, we are very excited for Dune, the Denis Villeneuve Dune. I believe we are only watching the first one, though, as that is technically the one that is on the list. Although Caveman is going to try at nothing to make me watch every other version of Dune that has ever existed, because that was his original plan, and thank God we ran out of time. Yay. If you haven't heard it yet or haven't had a chance to check it out, please go back and listen to our most recent bonus episode on The Lord of the Rings, where we cover the trilogy. I'm very excited about that particular podcast, so we hope that you love it too. As always, you can find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast, and email us at moviemingle@gmail.com with all of your thoughts and recommendations for great tartar sauce to go with fried fish, because that actually sounds good for dinner tonight, personally. Mm-mm-mm. In the meantime, thank you as always for listening. Please rate us 5 stars, whatever you feel we deserve best, across all the boards. And we love all of you little fans so much. Thank you for letting us be a part of your day. Now, you know what? Go swim and go mingle. Bye.
Bye.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach.
What's that bar? I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. Toga. Toga.